From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is being made right now in the classrooms and hallways of schools in the Rochester City School District. The RCSD was one of the only districts in the region to be fully remote during the pandemic last fall, but that changed this month when the district reopened under a three-phased plan. Right now, a few hundred students in specialized programs are back in person, and students in pre-K through grade 6 will be allowed to return in person next month. According to the district, about a quarter of all students opted into the hybrid program, while all other students remain remote. When it comes to older students, originally the district proposed that students in grades 7 to 12 would stick to the virtual setting for the remainder of the year, but those students can now choose to return to a hybrid in-person setting 2 days a week, beginning February 22nd. The Rochester Teachers Association has been critical of this plan, with President Adam Urbanski asking the district to pause in-person instruction until teachers are given a, quote, coherent plan for how to do it. He says teachers are being asked to perform tasks that are, in his words, simply not doable. Last week, the RTA sent a resolution and a survey indicating that the majority of RTA members want the district to remain in remote learning until 70% of teachers receive a vaccine. On Friday, RCSD Superintendent Dr. Leslie Meyer Small wrote a letter to Monroe BOCES Superintendent and Chair of the Finger Lakes Reopening School Safely Task Force, Joanne Antonacci, requesting an independent review of the district's reopening plan. Dr. Meyer Small says the district has worked with the county health department and other experts on the plan. In her letter, she wrote, quote, "With every other district in Monroe County already reopened, it concerns me that the Rochester Teachers Association is leading the charge to keep schools closed for city scholars who face significant educational disparities. Our team has been working tirelessly to ensure our buildings are ready and set up to follow social distancing guidelines," end quote. This hour, we're joined by the superintendent to talk about reopening and to answer our questions and yours. And it is always good to have Dr. Leslie Meyer Small with us on Connections. Dr. Meyer Small, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan. Good afternoon. It's good to be here.
I know this has been a hard set of decisions going all the way back to the summer into the fall. And now here we are here. When you said in your letter that, you know, with every other district in Monroe County already reopened, the concern is about educational disparities. Now, I know that you were optimistic going into September that even though you were fully remote, that you could make the educational experience really a pretty high level. What have you learned in the last 3 to 4 months about the challenge of doing it that way, and how well do you think it has gone?
Thank you for that question. That's a great one, Evan. A couple of things. We know that certainly remote instruction is working for some of our students, right? They're doing well, they're responding well, and they are, you know, they're responding to the curriculum, they're responding to the teaching and learning that's occurring. And that's not just, it's more predominant at the secondary level, but the elementary students as well. But we know that the younger learners, it is a little bit of a struggle, and certainly for our students with disabilities, it has been difficult for some students. I think it was very apparent Thursday, and again, this is just one example, but I think it does reflect the sentiment of some of our students. A student and a teacher and her mother were on, and they shared that remote instruction solely was very, very difficult for them, and that it was such a joy to have her daughter come back to school. And the teacher frankly remarked, and I was actually in that school on the first day, January 5th, when we reopened to that specialized group of students. The teacher said that that she can see already that the student is making progress and is moving forward academically. So we are, again, as it was articulated in my letter, we have been working tirelessly. One of the things that I said, I've made multiple presentations to the board about reopening, but probably about a month ago, is that I asked people to be flexible. I asked staff and families and others to be patient. We are starting this process where districts were experiencing these growing pains back in August and September as they were reopening, and we are just starting to do that, and much more so February 8th with our elementary students. We know that there's going to be bumpiness and that it's not going to be perfect. We all just need to be as flexible as we can and patient. We are working to develop the resources that our teachers have been asking for. So what does that include? Demonstration lessons. Our neighboring school districts, because good teaching is good teaching, have volunteered to resources to us. So we're working to compile all that information let's call it simultaneous instruction. So teaching your students in person as well as remotely or online. So we're working to gather all of those resources together so that our teachers can feel comfortable and other staff can feel comfortable. I get updates every single day from my chief of operations, Michael Schmidt, to ensure, and I'm not, you know, we know what's happening with PPE and hand sanitizer and all of those things. We have those available, not only for our scholars should they not bring it or forget or they lose it, but also for our staff. So we feel very comfortable with the health and safety piece. I think what's difficult for me, and I'm working with different avenues around this and actually am starting to make a little more progress, is the request that 70% of our teaching staff are vaccinated. That's not happening in any other school district in Monroe County. And so we are working to try and see how we can, you know, get, I don't know if moved up on the list, but we're trying to figure out opportunities that to make additional or make opportunities available for our staff to get vaccinated, because I know that that is certainly a concern. But we're working, we're trying to put the necessary pieces that people are requesting in place, and to have our students come back, our elementary students, pre-K through six, mm-hmm. come back on February 8th.
But do you think that demand, or at least that request, 70% vaccination, is that unreasonable from teachers?
Well, I think logistically, it's not. We're not able to fulfill that. If it's 70%, we know that where we are located as far as the list, but it's making sure that we try and figure out ways either locally that we can increase the ways. I think it's just difficult to manage because it's something that I don't control as the superintendent, or the district doesn't control that. We're working with multi-agencies to try and increase those opportunities for our teachers to get vaccinated should they desire to.
Let me read a comment from a parent, and I have a long stack of emails on a lot of different sides and angles here, which we will work through here, and a lot of, I think, good faith questions for you. I want to start with this comment from a parent of three in the RCSD. His name is Pablo. He says, Evan, we absolutely need the children back in school at least 2 days a week. The RTA should honor that need. There won't be teaching jobs left if the RTA balks again. Families will leave RCSD en masse, and we are already seeing an exodus from families that are turning to charter, private, and suburban schools. We, parents and students, fought for the teachers when their jobs were being cut in 2019. It is time they step up for us. That is from Pablo. So he's saying that there are already families saying, I'm not doing this anymore, that we need the kids back in school, I will move out of the district. Whereas you've got president of the RTA, Adam Urbanski, saying that their surveys indicate that a majority of parents still aren't ready or don't want this or have too many concerns. How do you sort of balance trying to figure out what families want? I mean, do you feel that the surveys are clear? Do you feel you have a clear grasp on what parents are demanding and what they want for their kids?
I think, Evan, that example or reading the comments is just the tightrope walk that I deal with every single day, sometimes moment to moment. That this has been such a difficult decision to make of what to do, because you do have the polarity represented. You have some or individuals who really say, you know, we should be open actually 5 days a week, right? And shame on the Rochester City School District for starting remote, and that we should be open more, or at least then maybe a little bit further down the line is at least the 2 days a week that we propose. And then the pendulum swings all the way over to the other side that says, nope, it's not safe. We're in the orange zone. It's, you know, the vaccination is not readily available or not available enough, and we shouldn't be closed. So no matter what decision, I'd be on the radio show if I decided to stay fully remote. We would be having this conversation with a different set of, you know, discussion points. So no matter what I do or our team develops, it's never going to satisfy anyone. And I think that, again, that's the tightrope walk that I make and take every day as we continue to move forward. I think the goal for us is to make sure that we are developing the resources, that we are applying flexibility, that we're asking our families to be flexible, and that when we start with the simultaneous learning, it's not going to be perfect, right? It's going to take some time for us to get up to speed with our district counterparts who have been doing it since September. So it makes it difficult. There are so many opinions on what the Rochester City School District should either do or not do. And those two examples that you read, I think, are perfect examples of what we deal with every day.
Do you feel that you've still got a good working relationship with RTA?
I think that's it's not difficult to answer. I have always had a cordial relationship with all of the unions. I know that, I'm being tagged in multiple social media posts that I'm not being responsive. There's been, I can't even count how many posts that I've had that I've been tagged in. And so we're trying to develop a good communications plan to respond, to take a look at what the issues are, and then to be responsive. But I'm always willing to talk with Dr. Urbanski and to meet with him. I meet with my union presidents, all four, and some of their senior level leadership. We meet every 2 weeks, so to try and keep the lines of communication open there. But certainly I'm open to other ways that I can make myself or my team available to talk through and to brainstorm some next steps.
You have been, in terms of public leadership, as long as I've known you, one of the single most accessible people we have met. To hear teachers say that you haven't been accessible to them, do you think that's a bad faith argument? Do you feel like you haven't been accessible?
Well, I think part of the problem is what I'm seeing. It's the hashtag RCSD answer me. As I said, you know, to respond to every single question it's just frankly not a good use of my time to go on social media, because I would be answering those questions all day, Evan. What I think is important, and I talked to Megan, she's going to post our reopening plan. Some of the questions are in there that they can be answered in either the school plans or our district-wide plan. And we have multiple resources on the website where my understanding where the biggest issues exist are with the instructional plan as well as technology. And so we are working to make sure that we communicate what that is, what's available, not only on the student side as far as what is available as far as devices, because our scholars are used to using those devices, right? So to shift completely back, they need some transitioning, as well as the technology that's available for our teachers and other staff. And then to really develop that good resource bank of demo lessons, because I've had teachers reach out to me and say, it's going well, it's working. You know, it took a little bit of time, but we're up to speed. So we've had some teachers volunteer to have lessons taped to show how it works. And so, again, never articulated that this was a perfect process. We are continuing to move forward. I want to be in concert and in lockstep with our teachers, with our teacher union. And that's the thing that often gets interchanged. The leadership, right, reflects the needs and the concerns, and our teachers are doing the day-to-day work. I want to work with both the leadership of the RTA in this particular instance and our teachers. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to connect with teachers and to have them hear directly from me, that we're going to be patient, that we're going to be flexible, and that we will move forward. And, you know, that's what I've been working on over the weekend and over the past several days to make sure that that happens. So it's important for me to be collaborative and to make sure that people feel supported. there certainly are going to be fears. As educators, we want to do everything extremely well. More times than not, we are type A individuals. So I understand the fears and the concerns that our teachers have. But we also know we have to balance that against the fact that there are multiple children that want to come back to school. And so if safety, we know that safety is it's intact, that we have the PPE. So let's really work on fortifying the instructional plan to make sure it's clear and to ensure that the technology is addressed, which they've been indicating.
Talking to Dr. Leslie Meyer Small, the superintendent of the Rochester City School District, and we'll get into some more of those specific points about the reopening plans in a moment here. I want to talk a little bit about how you kind of came to this decision, because you told us back in September that you would be reevaluating constantly as you went throughout the year, that it wasn't certain at the time that it would be that it was going to be a fully remote year. But I think it was sometime in mid-December that you said, you know, that there wasn't a change in plans yet. And then by January 1, there was a movement toward what has become this new plan. What changed over those weeks?
Well, a couple things. Certainly, you know, we talk about the feedback or the concerns from our teachers. But we also have to talk about the feedback and concerns from our parents. And you had particularly at the secondary level, parents were saying, listen, learning pods are not enough, that we need to have additional contact for our children. So we took that into consideration. Students also reached out who should be our main customer, if you will, using that language. And so I tasked my team over the break to go back and take a look to see what we might be able to do. And they looked through and they said, you know what, we can offer a hybrid. Now that we know the numbers of pre-K through 6 students who are coming and what that looks like, we can offer hybrid 2-day in person. So I came back. And we presented first to our union leadership and then to our Board of Education to move forward. Because as I said, if you remember in August, I believe when we last spoke, Evan, about the decision at least to go remote, my opening comments were, we know that remote is not optimal, but it's where we are right now. It's the decision that we're making, but in person, you know, is the preference. So that's the direction that we took, and we had our team looking at how to make that happen over the break, and we were able to do that.
Well, and then when it comes to sort of the big picture, have you been feeling pressure from the governor's office, from the state education department? I don't know if pressure is the right word. Everybody's going to have input, but I guess, but have you been feeling sort of pushed or pressured by the state? I mean, how much control do you feel like you've had given some of those competing influences? And frankly, when you look at other cities, especially cities like our counterparts to the west and to the east, how much have you learned from them?
So another great question. I think, you know, just from the very beginning when we decided to go remote, the pressure was always, well, why is Rochester the only district when everyone else around you is able to go back in some type of shape or form or fashion? So there's certainly been that, for lack of a better term, peer pressure, right, from the other districts and parents, frankly, reaching out and some staff saying, well, wait a minute, if other school districts can go back, why can't we? And, you know, we needed to take some time to really look at things and make sure that we could fortify and just focus on the instruction. But also remember, Rochester is a part of the Big 5. So take out New York City. So we're part of the Big 4. So larger than us is Buffalo, then Rochester, then Syracuse, then Yonkers. And Buffalo, which is to the west of us, is the only school district that has not reopened. And they're slated to reopen in another week or so, when February 1st. So all of our other Yonkers and Syracuse have reopened. Sometimes they've had to shift back either a classroom or a school because of the infection levels You know, they've had to shift back. You know, certainly we also have to be mindful of the fact that Rochester, when you look at the Big Five or the Big Four, is the only school district that has a state monitor that's appointed, because we have, take out the fiscal concerns, we have academic concerns. So if we know that in person for the majority of our students is the better way to go, how are we going to improve academic outcomes if our children aren't in school? So we've certainly had those conversations with the state education department, right? That Rochester has underperformed, unfortunately, over a long period of time. So there are many competing interests, pressures, influences on this. And again, we're working to make the best decision that we possibly can, given the pros, the cons, the likes, the dislikes, the this is what you should do, this is what you should not do. We're trying to move forward in ways that are supportive of all the different stakeholders that make up a school and district community.
All right, so here's sort of a collection of questions about the way that you're reopening the simultaneous mm-hmm. learning. So not, yep. you know, not just remote or in person, but trying to do both at once here. Mm-hmm. Here's what some of those questions sound like. Kelly writes, all instruction will be severely downgraded by the requirement that teachers deliver content to in-person and remote learners simultaneously, mm-hmm. despite the in-person students not having access to the same technology as their remote counterparts. Another teacher says, I'm struggling in designing lessons that will be equitable for in-person and remote students simultaneously, and I'm someone who prefers to teach in person. Matt writes to us to say, can you ask how the teachers are to teach remote and in-person students without proper tech in the classrooms? Teachers were told mm-hmm. to Google the best practices or figure it out themselves. And Chris writes, a big question, why is the district using the simultaneous model that teachers weren't asked about and ignoring our concerns and evidence that this is largely ineffective, and they're telling us to figure it out? Fair or unfair questions there?
I'd say yes and no. So we've been offering professional development on Wednesdays because that's our asynchronous day, right? So part of it is delivering supports to students, but other parts involve professional development. So the Office of Teaching and Learning has offered some professional development on the 13th, the 20th, and then again this week on the 27th. And they've taken the questions from the chat and tried to develop some FAQs. Additional concerns that have come arisen are, you know, demo lessons and additional information. So we're pulling together additional resources around that. So we're moving forward. And, you know, other arguments have been that, well, other school districts have had, you know, weeks or time, additional time to do this, and Rochester hasn't. So that's why we are offering the blocks of professional development. We want to fortify the professional development, or rather fortify the resources that we have. So we can certainly come up with additional resources, and we are developing and working on that. But I just have to reiterate that we are going to be patient. We're going to be flexible. Part of the issue, and I mean, let's be transparent here, to offer just solely to have remote teachers and then solely in-person teachers, we would have to add several other staff. We certainly can't do that. Fiscally, we can't do that. So, you know, that's very, very apparent. The other piece around that, and this was a concern both from the teaching side and the parent guardian side, is if we did that, we'd have more students that would not have the teacher that they've had since September. And that's a problem. Think about that. Not as problematic with the secondary level, but think about kindergartners in the district who have not been in person yet. They've formed this relationship remotely, but with their teacher. And then if they're coming in person or remaining remote, depending on which way it would go, they would have a new teacher. So, you know, part of this was to certainly reduce the number of switches that would have to be made, because that would be difficult to try and manage. The other piece is the reduction in instructional time if we didn't do this simultaneously. And again, I'm going to reiterate, it's not going to be a perfect process. We understand that, and we want to provide as many supports and resources for our teachers, so we're continuing to build that as I think sometimes not fast enough, but we are working on that and developing those resources to make them available.
Carl writes to us and says, in all caps, thank you, thank you, thank you, Dr. Meyer-Small, for making sure this reopening is moving forward. I'm an RCSD parent, a SOTA parent, and my children and I agree on going back to at least a hybrid model. That is from Carl. Two questions on vaccines come from one from Dave. He says, why will the superintendent not give time off for vaccination? She is making teachers use sick time. You can address that in a moment, and I'll add Kristen's question, who says, a question for the superintendent. As the spouse of an RCSD teacher, I live with a condition that puts me in a high-risk comorbidity group with respect to COVID. Given that I'm only 37 years old, I am not personally yet eligible for a vaccine. While my spouse has been able to receive a first dose of the vaccine, I worry for others in our situation who have not yet had access. I realize you have no control over vaccine access, but will the district offer flexible options for teachers who want to be vaccinated, have not yet had access, and are living with specific circumstances that put family members at increased risk? That's from Kristen. So first, on Dave's point, Dave says teachers have to make sick time and use sick time to get vaccinated and doesn't think they should. Is that correct?
That is correct. We have the conversation, and I think what's been frustrating to me is so then that gets portrayed that I don't care about staff. You know, so if I make that allowance, certainly for RTA, then I've got to look at all the other units that don't necessarily have the same contractual aspects to that. You know, one of the things I said is that we could certainly look at not certainly having to take a whole day, that we could break it up to half a day or even a quarter day. And I did respond around that. But, you know, that's something that no other district, to my knowledge, in the county is doing. And certainly I can be corrected if I'm not. So it's not that we're uncaring. It's, you know, that's what your sick time or your personal day should be used for when you have a doctor's appointment or need to make a medical appointment. So I don't think that's being unfeeling and uncaring, and I feel horrible that that's how that it's being the narrative that is out there, that I don't care about particularly my teachers. So, you know, that's not the case, and that's an appropriate use of sick time for a personal.
Okay, and Kristen is saying, you know, as a 37-year-old with a lot of risk herself, sure, and her spouse is a teacher, is there a way for teachers to say, look, I'll support what the district's trying to do, but I can't be back in the classroom in person yet?
So there is a very well-articulated process through the Office of Human Resources led by Dr. Miller. And so people can submit requests, but it has to be that there's a medical condition. So that's not a part of the approval process. It has to be that you have an underlying medical condition. They are following the guidelines that were given to us. And so we're not unsympathetic to that, you know, we are following the guidelines that have been outlined for us.
Okay. Listeners, if you got more questions or comments, we've got the superintendent of the Rochester City School District, Dr. Leslie Meyer-Small, with us on the program this hour. After our only break, we'll get more of your comments for her as we talk about the challenge of reopening schools, hybrid learning, and doing everything they can for students, teachers, and the community during this pandemic. That's coming up next with her. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, what can be done to achieve unity in this country? There's a lot of talk about unity. One idea is promoting more community service. But what would that look like? We'll talk about service in its many forms in our first hour. Then in our second hour, one aspect of President Biden's $1.9 trillion stimulus plan is aimed at helping people with disabilities. Our guests analyze that plan. Talk with you on Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. This comes from a kindergarten teacher who asked not to be named. Quote, the city school district continues to assert that it can do hybrid learning because the suburbs are doing it. Yet RCSD kindergarten students are not allowed to bring their devices with them to school to use. How is that equitable? Suburban kids take these devices with them to and from school. What is the plan for this? And as for guidance on how to do this, can you please say something? Can you please say something to convince teachers in the district that you have a reasoned and workable plan that conforms to the union contract and explain how the plan is going to work? End quote. So let's start with the first part on the devices.
So that's a lot to that question.
I know. it's a lot of parts. The first is devices going to and from school.
Sure. So Glenn Vanderwater, who's done a yeoman's approach to technology, has submitted a memo to myself and my team and the president of the teacher, Dr. Urbanski, and the ASAR unit about being able to unfold a plan for one-to-one devices. That memo also went out to principal, so we'll continue to unroll that and show what that looks like. I know that's being both and at the district and the school level. So they are, Glenn has put together a plan that will be shared with staff around devices.
Okay. And then just in general, the plan of how to do this effectively, teachers like this one are just feeling like, do they have information on how to do this and do their work effectively?
Well, I think as I shared earlier, Evan, there's still, you know, questions continue to come in. So we're building that resource bank and we'll continue to update. We update the website, if not daily, very frequently to continue to add resources. So, for example, the demo lessons are not up yet. The goal is to tape those this week to get those up and for teachers to see how that works. Additional resources will be provided to talk through strategies, et cetera, relative to simultaneous instruction. So is it all in place? Not at this time. We're continuing to, based on the questions or concerns that are coming up, we're building those resources and making sure that we make them available.
Mrs. Egan writes to say, what is attendance like for the phase one schools that are already back, and how does that compare to remote attendance?
Say that again, Evan. I'm sorry. Ask that one more time.
What is attendance like for the phase one schools that are already back, and how does that compare to remote attendance?
So phase one from, you know, I'm getting into classroom schools and classrooms, I've heard nothing but positive feedback. And, you know, we check in with the principals to see what are the things that they're needing. Do they need additional resources? And remember, our students in phase one are in school Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. So they're going 4 days a week. You know, what we've heard from parents and caregivers, that this was sorely missing and sorely needed. As far as attendance is concerned, I think it matches. We haven't done the deep dive yet about comparing the attendance for what it looked like in remote with what it's looking like now, but they're pulling that data to take a look at that. But for the most part, we have had a few students switch from hybrid to remote. But that's a question I would have to get back on. I don't know exactly what the attendance numbers are.
Okay. Susan says the RCSD had a hard time getting substitutes even pre-pandemic. What happens with the students when their teacher calls in sick the morning of? Do we have a plan for this? Or at least perhaps the district hasn't shared the plan yet on this.
From my understanding, that has been shared, but the Office of Human Resources has been working with our school chief to put that in place. So I will have to circle back to see. But from what I last understood, that we did have a plan in place. I know that professional development happened either on the 4th or the 5th for our substitute teachers, and that was led. I think we had 200 substitutes participate in that, but again, I can back check that to make sure. But we know that teachers will call in sick, and we do have substitute teachers who would be available to come in and support a teacher absent.
In other words, it doesn't sound like you think that you can't get the teachers or at least the substitutes necessary. I mean, would you say you're confident you can get staffing necessary in those days, in those moments?
I do.
Okay. Sydney's asking, if a teacher does need to quarantine or has COVID symptoms, are they required to have a doctor's note to return to work, or will a negative COVID test be accepted for clearance to enter the building?
That's something that should be communicated to the Office of Human Resources as far as process.
All right. I want to talk a little bit more about safety here because, you know, I've got, you know, a stack of emails of teachers asking to stay anonymous. And, you know, some are using words like we are terrified or this is not safe. There are huge concerns about safety. Before I get to some more specific concerns, I want to touch on a point that I think probably should be mentioned here. The county health department has said, and the governor's health staff have said, that they feel comfortable with in-person learning in schools. I am not aware of that changing. And I'm not saying this to provide cover for the superintendent. But I don't believe Dr. Michael Mendoza is going to stake his career on the line just to run interference for, you know, schools in Monroe County that want to have students in person. That doesn't mean that it's perfect. I mean, I think that the superintendent's been emphasizing this hour. If you're looking for perfect, it doesn't exist in a pandemic. But how much have you relied on the guidance of the health department, Dr. Myers-Small, on this?
They have become my on speed dial and my phone a friend. I work very closely with Dr. Mendoza and his team and the Department of Health. We would not move forward, and frankly, it was their support and their guidance and the information and the research that they provided to us that helped us in part make this decision to slowly reopen with our three phases. They have been widely accessible and very, very supportive to say, what can we do to help you? We know that this is the district's desire. And, you know, if we need to hold forums for staff, we can certainly do that and address questions. You know, if you need us to provide you with research briefs or information, we can do that. We work so closely. There is no way that I would move forward in this direction, Evan, without having the consultation of Dr. Mendoza and his team. Pediatricians, and here's the important piece, pediatricians who serve predominantly our students. So they're aware of our, you know, of the needs of our students, et cetera. So I feel very, very comfortable from our governor, from the state education department to our local officials, county executive fellow, as well as Dr. Mendoza, local physicians, pediatricians, infectious disease control staff. They've all worked with us and helped us to move forward to get to this point. So it has been highly collaborative and a partnership that we have been during this journey over the past weeks and months.
And I just want to add, before I go back to some comments, I'll take a phone call. Chloe, hang there. I'll take your call in a second. More emails to read for the superintendent. Once in a while, if I think it's pertinent, I'll share with the listeners a bias of mine. I don't really have one in this case. I'm really torn. I think this is such a hard call. I've mentioned my mother on this program many times. My mom is the center of my universe, and she's 75. She teaches in the Cleveland area. She's been teaching forever. She was a 40-year smoker. Thank God doesn't smoke anymore, but was hospitalized with pneumonia last winter before the pandemic hit. I mean, she is a certainly vulnerable person in this pandemic. I can't get her to stop teaching. And yeah, I'll be honest. I've said, just cash in some sick time till you get vaccinated, Mom. I don't want to hear that you got COVID 3 weeks before you get a vaccine. I can't get her to do it. I mean, it's what drives her to get up and go to work. So she's still teaching. It kind of makes me very, very nervous for her. So for listeners and teachers and people related to teachers, especially in vulnerable positions, I feel that. I also know teachers who are younger who are thrilled to be working and feel like it is so important to be there. So I'm pulled back and forth just like everybody else is. But what I don't what I don't expect to find is a perfect, easy, snug solution.
Right.
I find this to be very hard.
If it were there, I would take it.
Yeah, and that's not run interference for our guest, who I think has to answer questions and be accountable for the decisions they're making, and that's frankly why Dr. Meyer Small is here and has always said yes when we've asked her. Let me get Chloe on the phone, calling from Rochester. Go ahead, Chloe.
Hi, I am calling. I'm a little confused because I'm hearing a big disconnect from what the superintendent is saying on air right now and from things that I've heard from being a city resident and a friend of many, many wonderful teachers in the city school district. The first thing that I'm a little confused about is, I know you mentioned that there are medical exemptions for some staff. That's wonderful.
Yes.
However, I know several people that have put in for medical exemptions over a month ago and still haven't heard one way or another. And I mean, I'm also a teacher in a private school. If I hadn't heard a response from my principal in over a month, that would seem very daunting to me. And it would really, frankly, it would seem like there wasn't actually an exemption. It was just paperwork that I was allowed to file. The other thing that I heard you say is that
Chloe?
Sure.
Can I answer that one first?
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. Because I want to make sure, because that's one that I've heard as well. And there is a very well articulated process where they submit, and I actually see the list of what the, you know, not the names, but just in by unit who has submitted the numbers, not who, but the numbers. And there are sometimes that we're waiting additional information. I certainly can go back and do a triple check, but it's my understanding that HR has been responsive. Sometimes they're waiting for additional documentation. But to say that if someone has submitted and not heard in a month, I find that very difficult to believe. So that's something I certainly can circle back on. But I see the list of, and it's, you know, there's a couple categories that they've submitted, that we're waiting for documentation, that it's on hold because we need additional documentation, that it's maybe been approved or then it's been rejected. But that's one that I'll certainly go back, because my understanding is that no one has had to wait a month without hearing any word. It might be a month in the making because we're going back and forth requesting additional documents. But I stand by the fact that we're not just giving lip service to this and that we're not going to approve exemptions, because I know there have been some that have been approved. So I just, I'll certainly, that's something that I'll go back and double check.
That's
but it's
great
not
to hear.
My understanding.
I have certainly heard otherwise, but it's great to hear that you're going to go double check on that. That's wonderful. Yeah. The other thing that I'm just, seems to be a disconnect is, I know you've said that you've heard nothing but positive feedback from the opening that has already happened. And that didn't sit right in my soul, because I know the first day of the opening, there was a photo taken of, you and a group of children, and you were all together, you weren't social distancing. And I know you did hear a lot of negative feedback about that. So it's just, it just doesn't sit right in my soul that you can acknowledge that these things are happening, and you can acknowledge that maybe they are hearing time, but it is taking quite a bit of time for people to get definitive answers on medical exemption. And you have heard some negative feedback, and those aren't things that you're speaking about in this program. So I would just, it would seem
That's
more appropriate
point.
If you were mentioning those things also.
All right, Chloe, thank you. Go ahead, Dr. Meyer Small.
So, certainly, yes, you know what, a little bit of hyperbole on my part as far as saying, yes, I've heard some negative feedback. And certainly, you know, that picture is very frustrating, because if you look at other districts across the county, did we take a snapshot? Sure, and we weren't 6 feet apart. The kids were so excited. And certainly, You know, and so following up, lesson learned. I when I'm walking into buildings, I'm telling people you got to stay the 6 feet apart. And so, yeah, that did get, I think it, some of it was unwarranted, frankly, but I respect the fact that I do need to be a lead example and a model around that. But then, you know, and frankly, some of the other feedback, I'm trying to just sort through to actually get down to it. So when we really drill down, some of it is, it's a little bit different than what's being portrayed. But have we gotten some feedback? Sure. That has not been positive. And so let me say this. I don't think I've heard any feedback that's negative from our parents. We certainly have had staff reach out with concerns. So I stand corrected, and I appreciate that, Chloe.
All right. This is from another teacher who says, one major concern is a lack of transparency of positive cases occurring throughout the district. For example, employees at the RCSD Service Center on Hudson Avenue have reported an increase in the numbers of positive COVID cases that have not been fully reported. These are employees that are often in roles that require them to be associated with different buildings in our district. Is the superintendent concerned with the numbers of positive COVID cases at the RCSD Service Center? Where is the transparency?
So we, anytime that we have a positive case, it is reported to the appropriate process through the Monroe County Department of Health, and then we do update that on the website. So I'm not sure as far as what they're referring to as transparency, because we follow all the protocols. We obviously can't reveal that it's Leslie Myers who is positive right at the particular place, but we updated and Mike Schmidt and Stacy and that team have done, I think, again, a phenomenal job of making sure that they sort through all of that information and are following the protocols. So I hear a lot about the transparency, and so I'm not sure if it's maybe we're not communicating information that we can't or that we're not able to. So, I know that they're following the protocols as far as reporting, because we have to per the guidelines in the county.
Another listener is asking, how come teachers can return to school when the school board and other committees will not be meeting in person but will continue virtual meetings? Is this playing by two different sets of rules?
So I certainly don't control the board as far as what they do as far as meetings. I know they've had discussions. So that's something, honestly, not to pass the buck, that they would have to take up with the Board of Education. I know that, you know, I'm in there quite a bit, and we actually have a phase and plan for central office to be in, because, again, we need to model and be examples in the district. But as far as the Board of Education, I've heard that quite a bit. That's something that they make the decision as far as whether they're going to offer those meetings in person or remotely.
Kristen says, thank you for having this conversation. I look forward to having especially my youngest back in school. His little love of learning light is so dim. So that's from Kristen. Tom says, Evan, please ask the superintendent if she has an estimate of what percentage of RCSD students are currently having remote instruction but are being left alone with no adult supervision during the school day. Do you have any way of knowing that, superintendent?
I don't. I mean, other than if there's something that we notice on the screen that is off or, you know, disturbing to us, we certainly have a protocol for that, but I don't know.
Are you concerned about that?
I think I'm concerned about it on any given time. If a student may be unattended at home and they are coming back and forth, coming to school but not able to go home, that's something that I think any educator has to be concerned about. You know, again, we have the appropriate protocols in place that if we notice, if something is reported to us, because that has come into us, a neighbor has noticed that something is off, and they'll call the principal or they'll send an email or reach out via phone to our office, and we follow up on all of those. But as far as the percentages, I couldn't answer that.
And finally, I do hope perhaps sometime soon we can come back on the program with yourself and the head of RTA, Adam Urbanski, who's been on this program many times, because I just want to make sure we see if there's any bridges on some of these gaps. I mean, the RTA continues to point to 89% of their members saying they're not comfortable with the plans. Last question for you, about a minute left, Dr. Meyer-Small. Do you think that number accurately represents teachers in your district? And are you worried that they are not comfortable with this plan?
I'm worried if we just have one teacher that's not concerned. And so, again, we need, whereas I can't necessarily reach out to every single teacher, we can do that through different avenues, right? We can do that through our chiefs who are working with our principals who work with their staff. And certainly that's something that I think is really important, that we need to clean up that or address that, because there are people who are uncomfortable. So how do we make them comfortable? And so that's providing resources, that's giving information to them. But I think, you know, you get to a point that, and we started the conversation on the program, is that no matter what decision that I make, the board makes, or our district makes, you're always going to have someone that's not comfortable, that is unhappy with it. So we're doing our best to try and to hit that middle road and to make sure the resources are there and the information. And we can always improve on that, and that's what we are working to do.
The superintendent of the Rochester City School District is Dr. Leslie Meyer-Small, and I know how busy you are. We appreciate the chance to talk to you at length, and we always look forward to the next one. Thank you, Dr. Meyer-Small.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer of Connections. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, and we'll be back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio. By the way, I should mention, 2 o'clock, Governor Cuomo is doing his daily COVID briefing in just about 2 minutes, and you'll hear it right here.